Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. The title of today's show is... Show title has been delayed due to weather. That was on Twitter from EJ. And a very similar one posted just seconds later by WM Ryan. Says we will have an updated title in 10 minutes. And of course, thank you to Matthew Biano 44 for reminding us that it is indeed nice weather for ducks. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy. And yes, we are going ahead and having a race review for the race that never was. We're doing a race review despite there being zero green laps on the race course all day, because we've got the kind permission of our better halves to escape to our sheds and offices to chat F1. What are we going to do? Spend more time with our families? No, thank you. There's plenty of talking points to be had over the course of the weekend, and definitely enough talking points to provide you with some background listening for your commute or while you're doing your chores on a Monday. And I know it is massively disappointing not to get any racing. My 11-year-old is fuming. He was made to miss the Hungarian Grand Prix to go and visit relatives. He was livid then, and he's been waiting 4 weeks for there to be racing again. And I'm pretty sure he holds me personally responsible for that. But I have to say, I actually warned my son before today's race. I said, I think there is going to be some kind of accident today. And we had that chat where I said, look, there are human beings in those cars. So just be mindful of that when you're reacting to an event on track today. I've got a bit of a funny feeling in my gut. And that was before the rain. That was before the downpours and the stoppages, because the memory of F2 cars pouring into a stationary F2 car that had rebounded into a track is still very fresh. That memory is still very raw with the tragic loss of Antoine Hubert. And then with the six W Series cars all piling on top of each other on the top of the hill, as well as the crash with Lando Norris on the Saturday, I was already holding my breath before any of that happened. And then for those of you who've been watching F1 for a little amount of time, I think lots of you, as the rain was coming down, would have had your mind go back to 2014, to Suzuka. And I was torn. I have to admit, I was torn all day. There was a racing part of my heart that just wanted some kind of racing, that was saying, come on, there's a window there. Come on, they're driving the cars around. They can go around for longer. Just keep trying, keep looking for any opportunity to keep going. But there was another part of my heart that looked at all that rain and said, not today, please. And I'm not disappointed, really. You can call me soft all you want. I don't think I am. I think in a past life I've had plenty of risk-reward analysis in my career. But there really is a part of me today that didn't mind the decision, and in fact appreciates the very difficult decisions made by the FIA today. So looking back to 2014, they were driving under double-waved yellows Jules Bianchi went off track and hit a lifting vehicle. So now, when we see lifting equipment on track, we go, oh my goodness, why is that lifting equipment on track? But we didn't back then. If you look back then, you weren't screaming at the TV when you saw lifting equipment. It was almost like a random element that had been created by the rain. So you think, well, today we don't have that lifting equipment on track. But what would have been the freakish thing that happened today because of those conditions? What thing would have been thrown up for the first time that in future years we'd look at and go, of course we don't have that thing. But I'll remind you as well that a stationary car on track, as we know, can be just as deadly. And I know there's lots of people out there who will just be screaming, just get on with it. It's racing. It's dangerous. Danger will always be a part of racing. And to that, I say, I think you can accept that motorsport is inherently dangerous. You can have that. You can know that motorsport is a risk, but you can also fix specific and known dangerous elements. I don't think there's any bravado points for wanting to continue going with a known dangerous element. And modern F1 cars in those conditions today is a rodeo that we've all been through before. Don't worry, I'm not on my own. I'm also joined by Matt Trumpet. An interesting afternoon, Matt.
An interesting and lengthy afternoon for those of us who were watching the race for the podcast. And I think we will have, remarkably, quite a lot to talk about, even though the on-track action during the actual race, which some people refuse to call a race, was perhaps less than what we're normally accustomed to.
Well, we can call it the F1 weekend, can't we? But on a normal race review, we have so many notes from the build-up to the race and qualifying that we never get around to doing. So today, we can look at some of that qualifying action in a bit more detail. There's a lot of stuff about the Spa track itself and some F1 news as well that we can cover should we wish to.
Indeed, and I'm looking forward to all of it, especially with our other panelists.
Well, it's time to remind everybody that we are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Okay, well, that's clearly not the intro bumper, but as you can hear, I'm already being mocked by my panel. Kyle Power, how's it going, Kyle?
Very well, thank you, Spanners. I think you summed that up beautifully at the start. What can we say? I'm going to do my Alfa Romeo driver lineup noise of how to sum that up. Very stressful and frustrating. I actually felt a bit sorry for Mike Massey at times,
yep.
Getting questions that he couldn't answer, really, even though he should be able to answer them. Oh, what a mess. What else can we say? And the real losers today were the fans stuck out there getting soaked. I have been there at Spa in 2010. The Friday was a washout. It is not fun. So they're the real losers today, and they're the ones I feel sorry for.
We'll talk a lot about Michael Massey's decisions, but straight up front, there's a couple of things that impressed me. A, he did make those decisive calls when he had to make them. And when challenged, instead of being defensive or dismissive, he went to consult, and when he saw evidence that was contrary to his initial opinion, he went back on that and made the correct decision, which is all you can really ask for.
Yeah, he was put in massively tight spots, and I think he behaved quite well. And yeah, he wasn't getting annoyed, as we've heard previously. He was just very calm. And you turning on the Red Bull decision, it was fascinating to hear that exchange. And he was like, oh, you may have got me there. Don't actually know. Let me go and check. And that is exactly the right attitude.
Exactly. A wise man changes his mind when the evidence changes. Speaking of wise men, we've got from Denmark, Christian Pedersen. How's it going, Christian?
Mr. Charmer. Someone called me your Greek cousin. I like it.
Yes, you do have that kind of soap opera, initially good-looking hero protagonist turned bad boy look about you, to be fair, Christian.
I was thinking more about the family relation between us. I mean, the dinners, you would have to invite me more over, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think we can make that work. How did you spend your day today? Folding laundry, doing dishes, waiting and hoping for some action?
Bit of a strange day, wasn't it? You're sort of like knew it in your stomach that things would be postponed. And you still, as you said in your intro, you still wanted the race to go on. But yeah, didn't really want it to go on. And also you wanted to see some fights, but you didn't want Verstappen to go out in the first corner and then destroy his race and stuff like that. So it was a bit of a black and white situation today, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, let's do one I promised, which is focus on some of the pre-race stuff, which we never get to do. I'm pretty sure, Kyle, that you are going to be a fan of the Alonso visor cam. Where has that been for all of our lives in F1?
I know. Amazing. I absolutely love it. I was having not an argument, but a discussion with people on Twitter about this because I was demanding, well, pretty much demanding that why don't we have this? There is no excuse to have this. IndyCar has it. We've seen it in Formula E. We've seen it back in 2011 with Paul de Resta himself in Formula One. So as long as it does not compromise safety at all, then I can't see why we don't have them. There is the question of, oh, the teams don't like it. They're giving away information on the steering wheel. And that was brilliant. We could see exactly what was going on the steering wheel. But so did the T-pod cams at night races. You can still see the steering wheel. And it's not beyond the realms of possibility to put a blur box over it either. So unless it's on safety grounds or it's really tricky to have them on constantly and the teams don't like it, then I can't see why this isn't a more of a regular feature. But what a joy we were treated to. It's fantastic to watch those laps.
Well, frankly, I don't care if the teams don't like it. If every driver has one, then it's open access and everyone is operating under the same rule. So let's get every driver a visor cam. And what are we waiting for?
As far as I understand, but right now the problem is data. And so they have too much data to put into the ECU or wherever it goes through the T-cam section where the other cameras are located. So when they use this camera, they can use the front wing camera or the roll hoop camera. So I think it's about maybe some evolution of the technology, maybe talk about new ways of packaging your media files and stuff like that so you can get the data down, and then you will see more of this. And also there's a huge element of it from Bell, which is the helmet manufacturer, who's invested a lot of time in this. So it's not just something you do in a helmet. I'm pretty sure it's going to take a while for the other ones to catch up on that.
Okay, but what it's done is it's ruined the roll hoop cam. Because when I look at the roll hoop cam now, that's not what the driver can see. That's not an onboard. The key difference, I think, Kyle, obviously, you've done a lot of racing and I've seen a lot of GoPro footage that you and other members of the crew have done. And also, that is the view we transmit when we're streaming with VR headsets on sim racing, is you really get a sense of what the driver is looking at. And it's a much more sporting view than just being a passenger on a webcam on a car.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key thing with this camera on Alonso's helmet was the fact that it was behind his visor. So you're getting a really true representation
of what he's
actually seeing. All the other GoPro ones, I think the IndyCar ones, is the camera's actually stuck on top of their helmet.
Right.
It's kind of incorporated into the helmet. But this one's actually behind his visor, because that's something that's always fascinated me, especially when it's wet. I really wanted to see it today in the wet, because it's like how bad is the visibility? How good is their visor at clearing the water? And it's not just the water, it's the light bouncing off the track coming through. Even during those dry laps that Alonso had, you could see it was pretty hard to see at times. And also his view blocked by his own hand. So that's all fascinating to see. Also what they can see out of the mirrors. So I love this camera. Please, please give us more.
The one thing that I'm curious about, Matt, is whether the vibration we saw on the helmet cam is representative. So, for example, when I've looked at GoPro footage I've taken or have watched with Kyle, I know that in the kart, it doesn't feel as vibratory as that because your brain's kind of adjusting. So I could do with just a tiny bit of stabilization and just see if the drivers say, yes, that is reflective of how I'm not going for accuracy, I'm going for feel.
Yeah, no, I understand. It would be an interesting question to ask Alonso to look at that and say, is that what my eyes are seeing? Is that what his eyes are seeing, what we are seeing on the TV screen? That said, he is being damped by his entire body before the vibrations get up there, number one. But you know what I really want to see is the view with those 18-inch wheels attached next season, because we've already heard from Vettel that you can't see the curbs at all when you're turning into a corner.
As far as I know, they already talking about integrating some sort of stabilization into the cameras. And what you see in the feed from Alonso's car will always look more bumpy than reality. I actually saw someone who made you can sort of like stabilize footage from a certain point in the picture. And someone did that from Alonso's onboard. And that was maybe a bit too stabilized, but you should try and look that up. Okay. Something in between the two would be reality.
Yeah, Brundle seemed pretty happy with it. He actually made the comment of, now we have the vibrations, you're getting more of an authentic view of what the driver sees. So maybe there's somewhere in the middle. One of my gripes with the modern onboard cameras are that the shot is too narrow and they're too damped. So it looks slow. It looks too calm. It looks too smooth. I like to have a bit of rawness and a bit of vibration there. It gives you more of a sense of speed as well.
Honestly, looking at the Alonso onboard, I know this sounds obvious, but I don't want to drive an F1 car. Looking at that, it looks violent. It looks difficult. In the corners, it just looks so... everything's on you way quicker than you could deal with. And yeah, I mean, in deep down in my heart, some small, tiny part of me knew that I couldn't just jump in an F1 car. But I think now I really know a bit more.
That's the thing that people don't pick up on or realize, because if you've been fortunate enough to drive a racing car before, you touched on it there. It's violence. You don't understand how much of a violent process it is, even in a fast car. It's incredibly violent. You're being chucked around and you just don't get that impression from the TV or the onboard cameras. But this helmet cam gives you a slight inkling into the buffeting. So personally, I would like them to keep the buffeting and keep it completely undamped so we see it like that. But you're right. Sitting in there, can't see your front wing. Imagine doing that with 19 other people around, of the violence and the noise. It is absolutely terrifying. I don't think the general sort of casual fan really appreciates it.
And imagine your body is swooped into the car and you're like 5-10 centimeters over the road and your body feels all those vibration all the time through your spine. That's what makes it hard.
Yep. F1's scary. They probably earn their money. Okay, so Matt, I will rely on you to give me a flavor of free practice, because I was doing my best to watch it, but I was being led around the Isle of Wight on holiday, very much a passenger on that trip, Trumpets. So I did catch glimpses on Twitter, like Verstappen and Leclerc causing red flags. Anything to be concerned about? Because the only thing I was thinking of with Verstappen was, where is his headspace at? He came out worse from the Silverstone incident. He then just got that you can do nothing about it skittle moment with Norris and Bottas. And then you turn up at free practice and you put it in, you know, you put it off track, you put it in the wall.
Yeah, I don't think that really affected his head all that much, if I'm being honest. I think it would be more an annoyance. I would think for a driver, and I would love to check with Kyle, but the thing that would scare you is if it happens out of nowhere and you don't understand why. You would be like, oh man, now I'm properly terrified. But if it's a mistake I know I made, I'm just going to be kind of irritated with myself.
Yeah. People always say this involved in motorsport. I've had it myself, albeit at a much slower speed. It is terrifying. When you crash and you don't know why, you can't put that out of your mind. And that's what destroys your confidence is. Your confidence. So think of the second Red Bull drivers and they're just losing the rear. Like Albon, we heard him complaining. It's like, I've got no confidence. It's just going to snap on me. This is what we're talking about during our previous episode. If you know why, because, oh, I've just hit the white line, then it's easy to put that out of your head. Yeah. And again, I think we always underestimate the mental strength of racing drivers to be able to put something like that behind you and just get on and get on with it.
Okay, well, let's move on to qualifying, because I was able to catch that. And, you know, it wasn't without some kind of, you know, spousal debt and the odd side glance. We were in the middle of a field with the children playing and they wanted me to get involved in family activities. But no, I was focused in on watching the qualifying. I was so frustrated. I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. I've revealed this before. My iTunes reviews reflect the ham-fosty nature of me and the show on occasion. But I was distraught with the Mercedes strategy. It just felt like at every point they were half a beat behind. But really, it was Q1, Matt. It was yet again they've made a mistake. They've done something different to all the other teams. And having already seen Lewis Hamilton start on the grid line on his own and end up at the back of the grid, it was just a case of, oh, here we go again. They've gone out on the used inters and then had to change their mind. It's put them out of sync and it's just messed them up. And it was so close. It was so close to them not making Q2.
Yeah, that was really not a joke from their point of view. They left it about as late as you could and still get a lap in. The good news for them is if you're going to leave it that late and need a lap, they're probably in one of the better cars to do that sort of thing in. But any yellow flag.
Yeah, man.
Any red flag. And they would have finished, you know, 15th, 16th, 18th today.
Yeah, because, I mean, Kyle, it was a case of, yeah, they need this lap now. Oh no, they're coming in for the pits. All right, well, we're running out of time, guys. Okay, then he had a bit of an off. And it just felt like it wasn't going to come.
Yeah, I was shouting at the TV. I'm like, what are you doing? And particularly in Q1 as well, Brundle even mentioned it. Because what was the point in running around burning the wets when you can see other people on inters going faster? You're running out of time and leaving yourselves horribly exposed for a yellow flag. We've seen this a few times now with Mercedes in these high pressure situations. It's almost as if they're too worried about the consequence of screwing up and almost screw up because of that.
Yeah, I wondered if they might be a bit restricted. I think I was a little bit unclear there. The decision on used versus new inters was Q2, wasn't it? It was getting through to Q3. And then it was the starting off on wets. But a lot of teams did start off on wets in Q1. And then Williams seemed to show the way. So I think what Kyle is saying is interesting because we've seen a really tactically aggressive Williams this year, have we not, Kyle? And they've kind of gone for everything that they possibly can. Obviously, less to lose. But it shows that when you're not restricted, like Mercedes seem to be, they're a horse tied to a chair. Do you know what I mean? They could run away from that chair at any moment, but they see the rope on the little chair and they stay still.
Yes, I agree. George Russell even mentioned it himself afterwards. He's like, we have nothing to lose. We could just go for it. And I think they fully committed to having the fastest car over a single lap for qualifying. They went for loads of downforce, whereas Mercedes and Red Bull were watching each other with a big eye on what's going to happen the next day. Red Bull do seem better at coping in these situations than Mercedes. I do think, as you say, Mercedes sort of, they bound themselves to being hesitant and then being left up with their backs against the wall. It's really, really tricky, but Williams pulled a blinder.
They did. So I think we've got a couple of things to explore there, Matt. Firstly, the different setups between Red Bull and Mercedes. But I think we'll start off, you know, talking about that George Russell performance. Would they have had anything for the race? Do they care? Is getting a good qualifying position and being up there, you know, a priority? And I think in modern F1, this era of F1, actually, qualifying isn't quite the be-all and end-all that it used to be. Yeah, so qualifying used to be so much more important than it is now in the hybrid era. If you've got a faster car, if you've got a better race setup, you can go and attack in a race. You know, I'm not talking about necessarily Hungaroring Monaco, but on most of the modern or the wider F1 tracks.
Yeah, well, with DRS and on a track where overtakes are imminently possible, which Spa absolutely is that track, then you are not as tied to qualifying. And in fact, I would argue that had we had a normal start, a dry race, I could easily see Hamilton leading just because of the toe you get down the Kemmel straight. That said, for a team like Williams, who are still trying to put their technical package back together, the higher up I start and the more defending I can do, the better off I'm going to be. And choosing a high downforce package makes you very vulnerable at the beginning and end of the lap, but in the middle of the lap, it allows you to create a gap. And if you place your car well, you're going to make life difficult for people trying to get by you, especially with a Mercedes power unit.
Yeah, Matt's nailed it there. For the gain, for somebody like Mercedes to run higher downforce to get a better qualifying position, but be vulnerable in a race, they have a lot more to lose. They will slip back and it will be a disaster. If they finish fifth or sixth, it will be a disaster. For someone like a Williams, if they can put themselves right towards the front of the top 10, we see how far, even in tracks where you can overtake, we've seen how much the field spreads rather quickly at the start of races. So that time that they will gain over their rivals who they're battling with at the back of the grid, that will negate how weak they will be on the Sunday. That is a far bigger game for them.
Yeah, and just if you're far enough ahead to just stay out of trouble, A, you're going to avoid Lance Stroll coming through and taking you out, like what happened in the Hungaroring. And if you can keep someone behind you you don't know. You just never know. Their tires might just suddenly go. They might end up having, because if you're slower and you're holding up, say, Charles Leclerc, and then that allows Vettel to catch up, suddenly Leclerc's got to start defending, loses time, and then you end up gaining that place. So you do never know. Christian.
I have a little bit of an issue with the qualifying being, you see, I love the cars just running around in their like maximum trim.
Yeah.
That is always fun. I especially loved it back when they only showed like one lap at a time where you can follow each lap. So it was on point. But anyways, qualifying is very exciting, but it just doesn't really mean anything. And the only times when it means anything, it's for races where the races doesn't mean anything, for like Monaco. So if you have to do a good qualifying for the race to be able to get, finish high, then it's because you can't overtake in the race. And that shouldn't be the premise of a qualifying. I think they should give points or some, just give us a carrot for the qualifying. So a guy like Russell today would actually gain something from being so awesome.
Yeah, and like normally he wouldn't. Today, he has gained points, or has he? That will come up later.
It's a freak situation today, right?
Yeah, but there's also some controversy as to whether the points will stand, which we'll look into later, which I'm stalling to see if any official confirmation comes through. That's why that topic is all the way over at the end of the show. But I do want your perspective a little bit as well here, Christian, because we have a lot of George Russell hype, especially with him potentially going to Mercedes in 2022. Toto Wolff thinks he's made a decision. He says he's made a decision. And this is just my wild speculation, but the fact that he said he's made a decision and not announced it has a very Bottas-y vibe about it. I remember when they were, you know, announcing stuff with Perez, Aston Martin, they timed all those announcements for when Perez was on a natural low ebb and Stroll was on a natural high ebb. Announcing Bottas now for 2022 would be PR suicide. So you wait till Bottas picks up a victory and Russell's had a couple of slow races, then you announce that you're keeping Bottas. That's where I think Mercedes are at the moment. Complete wild speculation. But with the George Russell hype, how is it seen in your part of Europe? Are we getting overexcited? It's hard not to when, you know, a British driver pops up in a Williams in second place on the grid. It's hard for the Brits not to be excited.
I think it depends on what point of view you have when you watch F1. But the general fan, I think, is the same as in England or France or wherever, because Russell is just a fresh breath of air and you want him to do well. But I have a different take on the Toto Wolff thing. Just a short comment on
it. Go for it.
Because they've talked about this being announced mid-September-ish.
Well, they said summer. But I'm sure they did.
Yeah, summer or September, sort of. But I don't know if you noticed like a difference in vibe from, maybe I'm totally overanalyzing this, but I felt like a difference in vibe from Toto Wolff's comments on it before the good result in qualifying from Russell. And afterwards, and afterwards, he was more like, "We'll announce it," but in a more cheeky kind of tone.
Oh, you think
so? Carl, yeah,
Carl seems to agree.
Did you see Raikkonen sitting in the Red Bull garage?
No.
I mean, why would he sit in the Red Bull garage during the rain and not in his own team? They say he's leaving next year. Bottas to Alpha Russell. Da, da, da.
You think that's
that
the
is the rumor?
You agree, Kyle?
I do, and it's mainly purely based from, I think it was George Russell's interview on the Friday morning in Hungary, where they asked him, what's the decision next year? And he just kind of had a natural sort of burst out laughing reaction. And he was like, oh no, nothing's been made, or we've got nothing to announce. And he, you could see in his face, he couldn't keep a straight face. He was really struggling and he was bursting like he wanted to tell everybody. And I think it's already been done. Like, I read that as he knows that he's got that Mercedes seat and has to act dumb now until the rest of it. And as Kevin said, they were like, there's nothing to announce. Bottas
went
straight to it. Oh my God, I just did it, didn't I?
I love it. I love it.
It's all
because
Danish
I'm
people
really
are
Kevin,
Kevin
in the Slack group, in the live thing. So I blame all of you in the Slack live stream. Keep saying Kevin, because I've just fallen straight into your trap.
Hello to our live stream. At the moment, the live streams are not on YouTube. Oh, the live streams are in our Patreon Slack group. But continue, Kyle, even though you should be mortally embarrassed.
So as a... So as Christian said, when they were sitting in their press conference, George seemed quite calm and very assured that he knows. And yeah, it's right. All of the rumors are that, and Wolf has said this himself, actually. Wolf has said this himself. He said, we're not going to announce until we've sorted the futures of our drivers out. So I think they're just trying to get the Bottas deal in place before they announce anything.
Okay. Well, that's less interesting than my speculation, Kyle. Mine was more entertaining. All right.
Sorry.
Let's hear yours. I want to hear yours.
No, I did. I told you mine. Mine is that, that I think that they are quite happy.
Yeah, he's staying.
So okay. I think, this is my little theory, I think that Lewis Hamilton is a lot more valuable to F1 and Mercedes than people generally think. And I imagine that Lewis Hamilton will genuinely be thinking about, if I win this eighth title, should I stay in F1? And I would not be surprised if Domenicali and Wolf were like, hey, dude, hang around a couple of years. You get your piece of the merch pie. It's all going to be super duper, because if Hamilton wins this championship, he's going out. He is the superstar of F1. Look at his social media impressions, his social media following. He is absolutely massive compared to the rest of the F1 field. Is there another superstar ready to take his place? Not quite yet. If he hangs around another couple of years and Verstappen or Norris or Russell ends up being kind of, you know, on that kind of superstar status, then F1 can afford to kind of let him go. So that gives Hamilton a bit of power. And I just think that people think he doesn't have a say in his teammate. I think he'd be perfectly happy to have Bottas stay on. And I think people will listen to him if he's making noises about retiring or not. Go on, Christian, please.
Oh, just a shortcoming on Bottas. We shouldn't forget that when Mercedes messes up in the garage like they did here, he goes out there and he gets a decent qualifying. He doesn't. He gets into Q3, even though Mercedes messes things up. So he's still delivering on a pretty high level, I'd say.
Of course, Kyle. Yeah.
So further onto that, and what you were just saying about Lewis having input onto who his teammate is, I was quite surprised at the end of qualifying, Lewis wasn't particularly massively enamored with George being in second or massively friendly. He did give him some praise and appreciation, as he always does to other drivers in the press conference, but he kind of walked past, looked at him and then looked away and then looked up and gave him a little fist bump. And that was it. It wasn't all over him saying, wow, you've just done a year. Well done, man. You've done a great job. He was very matter of fact and very cold to it. So that's telling me that he was a bit annoyed. He was like, I don't want you to be my teammate next year. I still want Valtteri, but you're making him look bad.
So Vivek says, I think that's wishful Hamfosi thinking, Spanners, because he's going to be up against Russell next year. And yeah, kind of. Look, I don't want to dwell on this, but I've made this point before, Matt. If I was Lewis Hamilton at 27, a couple of world championships, yeah, you'll take the world on. And the same as a Lewis Hamilton fan, I'd be the same. Yeah, take the world on. But when you've got seven titles, maybe eight titles at the end of this year, you don't, and you're old as well, because Lewis Hamilton's, what, mid-30s now for an elite athlete that is old. Do you really want the next big thing right next to you in that seat? I think you've probably earned the right to have your Barrichello.
Well, you have. But more to the point, you have such a brand new technical specification coming in next year. I mean, we've only ever seen Russell really in the Williams and once in the Mercedes in a course that had like three corners to it. So I'm not going to count that. Who knows what the car is going to drive like next year. Yep. And Bottas has a long history with the engineers and working with the engineers at Mercedes. And if it's going to come down to the same kind of battle that we're seeing this year with Red Bull or with Red Bull and Ferrari, let's say, I don't know. Do I want a rookie whose performance might occasionally be inconsistent, or do I want someone who can give me that kind of feedback and that kind of support to the driver that I still feel to be the best on the grid overall?
And that's my hesitation with Russell at the moment, is that when he does really, really well, it is highlighted. And when he does well, it is spectacular and he is pulling out these results. But what we're not seeing is, okay, let's judge him against a full season against a relentlessly consistent competitor. So we just haven't seen him over a season against a Hamilton or a Verstappen or even a Russell. He's been fighting I don't like the term is fighting bums, but you know, I know, you know, Robert Kubica, he had, you know, limitations that he had to deal with, and also I'm not going to shy away from Latifi isn't probably top draw caliber F1 skill. So at the moment, Russell is unproven against a teammate consistently over a season. He can pull these results off like we had on Saturday, and these results do happen. These second places in a Williams, they do happen. Stroll pulled one off in 2017. Hülkenberg, you know, got a pole. Bottas, didn't he get a Canada
second in Russia?
Yeah,
pole.
Exactly.
Almost, he took a pole in Russia. Yeah.
And there was one at Canada, but I forget who did it in changeable conditions. So these changeable conditions qualifying things, they do happen, and not all those drivers turn out to be F1 savants. However, if you want to get excited about George Russell, increasingly these could happen to anyone, kind of occasionally do happen to people, results keep happening to George Russell. So, you know, it's getting beyond a fluke is all I'd say, but you're right about the consistency, Matt. We don't know yet. Go on, Kyle, sorry.
Well, with consistency, you need to be adaptable to adapt to several things changing over the season to remain consistent. And I think George Russell has shown us all he needs to show in the terms of adaptability, jumping straight into a Merc that he didn't fit in and being instantly on the pace and being completely robbed of the race win. For me, that alone, it sounds a bit short-sighted, but I think that was enough to show me, if I was a team boss, of yes, you are absolutely ready for this. We've thrown you in the deep end. You weren't supposed to be anywhere near as good as that. Yeah, you've earned your seat.
Last season's Merc. Had he done it in this season's, I'd be more impressed. I'm just going to say, you know, he walked into one of the most planted and easy to drive for a Formula One car. No Formula One car is easy to drive. Just going to get that out of the way. But relatively speaking, he got a pretty plum assignment compared to his Williams.
Oh, agree. But to counter that, he's changed concepts. The Williams are high rate concept and the Merc's a low rate. It's a totally different car and the philosophy of how it's made. So in that, it may have been a planted car, but it's a very different car.
And in riposte, I shall simply add that pretty much all of Mercedes was focused on getting him a decent result there. That will not be the case so much if he's a regular teammate to Hamilton.
I just want to add that the qualifying, there was one freakingly good driver, not like three or four who hit the sweet spot. There was just Russell. And I think that stands out in a major way.
All right. Look, I think it is time to move on. Let's move on. So away from qualifying, Matt, I guess we go to the race. What do I say here? Where was the race won and lost? I'm not even going to play the bumper. Right, but where? No. What do we? What? Was there a race? Okay, stop. Was there a race?
Yes.
All right.
Points
sure?
were awarded. There was a race.
Okay.
Is that final?
Yeah. Points. There's an official classification been published. So yes, that is final. Of course, barring any appeals, but we're not going to go there right now. No, I want to bring up one particular thing about qualifying, because as we all know, the first place the race was won and lost today was qualifying. The order you started in was the order you finished in. So if you didn't do the job yesterday, you couldn't get it done today. But what I want to bring up, not talked about, is the specific lap that Russell did in Q3. And I want to talk about it not from Russell's point of view, because he absolutely delivered, but from Williams' point of view. Because they put him out there at the same time as Ocon. Both he and Ocon went out on the wet tires, brought them back in, and this is after the Norris crash, so we only had 9 minutes. Put him on the enters. Two push laps after the out lap for Ocon. Williams said, nope, you're going to go do your out lap. You're going to do another lap. You're going to have a fully charged battery. You're going to have hot tires, and you're going to have the track as dry as it's going to be, and you are going to lay waste to everyone's expectations. And that is exactly what he did. So what I'm seeing from Williams comes from Jost Capito, and I'm seeing this team really starting to turn itself around from a management and from a technical point of view.
I second that.
Okay. Kyle, you third it?
Yeah, I third it. And further to that, whilst we're still on along with the George Russell praise, that puts a lot of pressure on your driver taking that decision of basically saying you have one chance and one chance only in these conditions. I mean, it takes one snatched wheel to go wide and to go off. That puts the driver under incredible amounts of pressure. And again, to deliver, it was a great lap. But again, they had not a lot to lose. So they gambled on that. They gambled on their driver nailing it. They gambled on it. And but you know, hats off to them. They pulled it off. Brilliant.
Okay. It might be the rum talking, but did we just go back to qualifying, Matt? What have you done? I played a bumper. There was a graphic. It's time to talk about the race bit.
Well, the qualifying impacted the race today, so it was worth a mention.
We talked about it for... Whatever. I'm back from holiday. I'm tanned. I'm gorgeous. I'm relaxed. I'm not going to pick a
look at what I'm working with here. I'm doing the best I can.
Okay.
I have a highlight from the race.
Okay. Okay, let's go to that. You've said it now.
Did you get the team radio from Lewis Hamilton?
No.
I'm just... should I just read it out loud? It's not... there's no curse words or anything.
Is it the toilet one?
Yes, I'm not going to read it then. Should I?
Yeah, go on. Even kids love poop humor.
I'm glad I went to the toilet. The one I went to, someone had dropped a crazy bomb in there. The worst thing ever. It's going to haunt me for life. And I'm just sitting there in a kind of rain, wet, and just with that thought in your head that must have been... That was a highlight.
Look, it is a highlight because you need things to amuse you when you've got a rain-delayed session and you're just hoping to give some racing. And I was glued to the TV broadcast the whole time. I had to pull my boy away from the TV, even though there was no racing happening, even though it was only the occasional medical car doing rather impressive laps of Spa-Francorchamps, to be fair. We were all still glued because... there's still drama. It's still the people we want to see. We want to see Daniel Ricciardo starting to a Mexican wave around the track and the drivers getting in and out. But here's where I'm perplexed, Matt. Here was where I'm still perplexed, in fact, was that they started the race. They set off, 19 cars set off. Don't worry, we'll get to that in a second. 19 cars set off under the safety car. They did a couple of laps, decided, no, it's not safe. We're going to pull in. And then literally nobody knew whether the race had started or not. In fact, there was a team radio to the FIA saying, has this race started? I didn't know. We disagreed. Did those laps count? Were those race laps? Are those officially race laps? Do you put that fuel back in? Do we have to race those laps later? And just what amazed me, Matt, was just that no one knew. When they were interviewing team principals, no one knew. We didn't know, but they all gave different answers.
Well, this is what I love, because you brought me to my second place. The race was won and officially lost, which is the lawyers. No, we didn't know. This is the kind of situation that shows up only so rarely that we were playing on the edges of the rules. The rules are sort of written with the general idea of what normally happens in a weekend. This was not that. This was not even close to that. And what I want to say about that in particular, and we did see... is that, you know, we were sitting there, according to the regulations, it's a 3-hour maximum from the start, from the scheduled start. You have 3 hours to finish the race. That's it. You're done. If you start a formation lap behind the safety car, that was inarguable. And yeah. The Red Bull lawyers went and had a look at the International Sporting Code, got on the phone. And I say the Red Bull lawyers, I've only heard it was the Red Bull lawyers. Someone somewhere pointed out to them that, hey, you know, your stewards have the power to basically do whatever they want, thanks to the International Sporting Code. And that includes just stopping the time, stopping the clock from running and restarting whenever they feel like it. And that is exactly what they did. Had they not done that, had time run out without those laps behind the safety car at the end?
Yeah.
No points, no race.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was devastated when I heard about this 3-hour rule. So in my head, and this happens from time to time as an F1 fan, you have certain procedures that you just are so used to. So in my head, you have 2 hours to complete a race. So in a normal race, you set off, and if there's a, you know, if they're slow or there's bad conditions and the track is long, then you just have 2 hours to finish that race. So I can't remember a time that it's really happened in normal conditions, but should you reach the 2-hour point before finishing all the laps, as you cross the line at the 2-hour point, that's the last lap. So that's what I'm used to. If there's then a red flag for an accident or for rain or anything, you have 4 hours to complete the race in total. And if you can't get the race started, you can go on essentially as long as you want because the race hasn't started. Monday in my head was always an option. I'm sure there was a race that nearly started on a Monday. But what I'd missed, Kyle, was this 3-hour rule that they changed it to 3 hours from the race starting. It's got to be 3 hours. And I'm just distraught because why? Why would you limit yourself with a rule like that? Obviously, the answer is money. Kyle, then yeah. Christian.
I completely agree. I thought it was the 4 hour for the event time, 2 hour for the race time. And this was brought in, remember, after the 2011 Canadian Grand Prix, which had a huge wait in the middle of it. And I think the rule was brought in so we didn't have to see images of Rihanna stumbling around the paddock after too many sherbets, which is what we were treated to at the time. And they brought this 4 hour in. So I don't know why the logic was. I don't know what the logic is to reduce that to 3. And it just massively restricted themselves. So when they actually paused the clock, finally, with only an hour left, I was really happy. I was like, finally, a bit of logic. This is actually giving yourselves a bigger window to operate in.
Why didn't they pause it after 1 hour? Why didn't they pause it at 3 o'clock UK? Yeah,
exactly. I think they have to use force majeure. I think they have to really wait until they really, really have to use it.
Right. No, I think Matt's got a point here. Sorry, Christian. I think Matt's got a point here, which is that they were never going to use the force majeure. It's just that Red Bull is the speculation from you, isn't it, Matt? Are the ones that put it to them at that point when the time had already ticked away. And I think the teams were taken by surprise that the clock had already started. And once they realised the clock had started and there was less chance of getting a race, that's when they started ticking and making suggestions to the FIA. The force majeure came at the point that everybody realised that that was an option and agreed that was an option, which left us with an hour's racing. I think if they'd have made that argument earlier, they'd have been able to do it earlier and had 2 hours racing. Christian.
So the whole F1 circus is basically built on TV contracts. So all the money that comes into Formula One comes from media contracts. And usually what Bernie Ecclestone was so brilliant at was to make individual contracts with everyone and make people pay way too much and some in and Monaco not pay so much and so forth. The problem with this is the major networks, they have schedules. And so in Canada, for instance, which was our time zone was a night race, that messed up their time schedules all over the plate. And you can't mess up a Sunday night time schedule on a major broadcast network. Things are different nowadays. Mostly they have dedicated streaming channels, or if you race during the day, you don't really have that much pressure on your broadcast schedule. So that is why it's different nowadays. I'm fairly sure they will look at the rules maybe between now and next season.
Matt, and this is a conversation we were having, which is, yes, there might be a regulation laid down in stone. But at the end of the day, they're going to do what's best for the event. And so the force majeure, I mean, rain, is that a force majeure? It sort of makes a mockery. When you have caveats like that, it basically means here's our intention, but we can actually do whatever we want all the time. So there's people in the chat there saying the start time is governed absolutely by the TV schedule and when you say we're going to start. However, as we've clearly seen, the start can be delayed. These time limits can be extended, so they can do whatever they want, essentially.
Well, the International Sporting Code. And so just to be clear, what we're talking about here in the rule book is regulations 5.4B and 6.4 regarding the start of the race.
We all knew
and
that.
Regarding the Sporting Code, what they referenced was 11.9.3.0. O is in the letter, not as in the number. Because I know there's going to be at least three people who are going to go look that up now. So you're welcome. But it, with regards to the TV contracts, yeah, there probably is. And I know, and I remember a long time ago having a conversation with Gary Hartstein, who was the F1 doctor for a while.
Oh, yes. I forgot we had Gary Hartstein on our live stream. Yeah, that was wonderful. I like that.
And he said, like, this is in reference to Suzuka 2014 with Jules Bianchi. He said that the pressure that would be brought to bear on them to approve the start of a race in conditions where, say, the helicopter couldn't fly.
Yeah.
Was tremendous. And I asked him, I'm like, well, what would your response be? And he said, I would tell Bernie that as soon as he signed a contract saying that he was fully liable for anything that might happen on track, they could go ahead and start the race. Otherwise, no. And it for people who are going to argue about whether they should have done what they did and it's all about the money, like, yeah, it is all about the money, because at the end of the day, this is a business that has a sport attached to it, not vice versa.
Someone's saying they dozed off at the mention of the rules. And I'm sorry, I don't know if non-Brits know about the program Red Dwarf, but as soon as you started going like, Article 4.5672, my mind instantly went, oh, no officer may wear a ginger wig at a tea party. So there's a bit of a niche reference there. I do apologize. Kyle?
There's also a little bit more to it as well. And I think it's Kevin, somebody who's genuinely called Kevin, Rosco in the Slack group live stream mentioned a will trackside spectators get a refund. Now, I think this plays a part of the decision process as well, to make him run a certain amount of laps to then consider it an event. And then once it's considered an event that has been run, they have fulfilled their ticket obligations. They don't have to provide a refund to all of those fans. Now, we had a similar situation from a customary MotoGP comment at the British MotoGP a couple of years ago at Silverstone, where it was really, really wet and they just straight up cancelled the event in the end. They didn't try to run it and they cancelled it. And I do believe that a lot of the spectators either got their tickets deferred to the next year or received the full refund. Formula One have ensured that that's not going to happen. And I think Lewis mentioned this at the end of the race, and I don't think he's too happy about it. But again, it's not Formula One as such. It's the circuit owners that will be paying the price for that, basically.
Kevin?
The force majeure rule? I'm just reacting to it.
Christian, sorry.
The force majeure rule, that could be a problem for the track. So if Formula One used force majeure to cancel a race or postpone it or whatever, that would be the reason, and they would have to adapt to as well. And that might not give them the insurance money to pay people.
So
just putting it out there.
Okay, look, we're into like logistics, but this is reflecting a lot of the arguments that people were having online. And Monday, that was a thing. Why can't we have the race on Monday? So in my mind, I'm so sure that Monday was an option a long time ago. But the argument that kept coming up and up again was, well, the marshals have all got to go to work. They've got normal jobs. They're volunteers. They don't get paid for this. So they can't take another day off. And I just wanted to make the quick point again, to the point of being burdensome and tiresome. Well, why don't we pay the marshals? Let's pay marshals. And then in their contract, some of those marshals, because not all of them will be required for one race on a Monday, those marshals are there for all the events all weekend. So I asked on Twitter, someone told me there's around 1,000 marshals for a race weekend at Spa. Okay. So I don't know, plucking a number out of my butt, 500 of those are on a retainer contract that says if it's on a Monday, you have to go there. Because the teams, they can all work. The FIA, they can all work. They'll all have contracts that say, you can go and work on a Monday if we need you. Pay the marshals. There's 1,000 marshals. What's a good day rate? What's a good day rate in Europe for a marshal for the day? Considering it's quite a high-profile thing and it's a fun thing and people do enjoy doing it. 150 euros. 200 euros for the day. 200 euros 200. For the day. So 200,000 euros on the scale of what F1 and the teams are spending. 200,000 visitors to Spa on a weekend at least. Let's pay an extra pound, all of us, to go and watch the Grand Prix so that marshals get paid. Why don't we do that and stop using, well, the marshals are volunteers as an excuse, Carl. I'm getting sick of hearing that the marshals are volunteers. Let's give them a day rate and let's get really good ones.
How much is the ticket now?
I don't know.
A general, I think it's really expensive.
80, 90 quid. So your marshal tax on top of that doesn't feel like a lot. Oh, no, for a general admission at Silverstone, isn't it like 90 quid, 120 quid? Oh,
more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, even then, it pales in comparison. The marshals are doing basically a skilled role. They're doing a skilled role. So and by paying them, you will increase the standard as well, like even more.
I completely agree. I was a marshal myself for a few years, albeit for the bikes and not for Formula One, but I did the big international events. And we were volunteers. You have to go. You have to know what you're doing. You have to go and pass course and be signed off and do club races. I will fully support marshals getting paid, but I don't think it will ever happen because most people would love to be a marshal because you get some of the best seats in the house.
So yes.
If the marshals are demanding being paid, they're just going to get people who are going to do it.
No.
Paid.
Okay, not and demanding. I'll be clear. I'm not saying the marshals should go on strike for pay.
Oh, no.
I'm saying us as motorsport should start respecting what the marshals do. It can still be competitive. And like being an actor is paid low generally because people want to do it. But we should cover their expenses, give them a day rate and have them on a contract. That means if we need a Monday race, they'll stay and do it.
I completely agree. The marshals getting paid would be one of the best things ever. It would be great. But for the Monday race, I hope I pronounce your name right, Weitzer van Bruggen, in the chat points out it's not just marshals on Monday. There's police presence, food, drinks, logistics, track personnel, etc. It is a huge upheaval and it's not a bank holiday in Belgium on Monday.
Okay, I'm just going to talk to you, Matt, because Carl's making too many. Look, the logistics. I'm an ideas man. I haven't worked out all the details. I'm just saying. I just wanted to make my point about the marshals and now you're making it about the ice cream salesman outside. You've ruined everything, Carl, as usual. Matt.
Yeah, well, I think the point you bring up is exactly why it couldn't have happened, which is basically that if you wanted to do that, it would need to be written into everyone's contracts that such a thing was possible.
Yeah, we'll do that.
And having said that, like, you have even the teams moving freight and stuff like that. Like, it's one thing to rebook all your personnel on the team's tickets home, but it's another thing when you have to move all of your freight from here to there by next Thursday for scrutineering.
Look,
what has to happen.
I'm old. I've got a bit of a shoulder injury, but I could throw a gear wheel from Spa to Zandvoort. Christian.
Well, I totally agree. I think the marshals should get maybe not a paycheck, but get something in reward. We should also remember that these people are there for the love of the sport. So it's a bit like going somewhere with a friend, being up close to the racing, actually having a job on the day. It's also an experience. And I think if you could find something in between those two things, so maybe the payment was all the marshals could go see a car in the woods or maybe have a trip around the something that was special for them on the day or during the weekend. That would make sense.
Danish Christmases are very different. Now, listen here. Your Christmas present is to go and see a car in the woods. Okay, that's my generic European accent.
Sorry I said the woods. That's because it's very woody there.
That's true. All right. Okay, so we can't avoid this for much longer, Kyle. 19 cars made the grid. Mm. 19 cars made the grid. Again, a massive Sergio Perez fan. I've been wishing him all the best. Was delighted to see him get the new contract. I think overall that is the right decision for Red Bull to give Perez the contract. He was very kind of optimistic about it in the sense that, well, it's a reset in 2022. Those cars could suit me. He has a distinct driving style. They could suit him. It's not inconceivable that they could suit him to the point that he could have a reasonable shot at being the number one driver at Red Bull. Chances are it would still be Verstappen, but he, in his mind, he's got a shot because it's a big reset. He's not driving the new car anymore. But geez, too many of these this season, eh? Too many of these.
Yeah, he was a bit... It looked like he was pushing slightly too hard, understeered. As soon as he hit that curb, he was doomed and straight off to the barrier. Now, you could criticize him for pushing really hard on the sighting laps, but they're encouraged to push. This might be their only opportunity they get to sample how much grip there may be when they arrive there in like 40 minutes time. So he has to go for it. As for whether he should be allowed back into the race, this is really open for debate.
This
because
is a good one.
I think the procedures and the way they kind of did the race start, I think the procedures kind of contradicted themselves, and it's a bit of a gray area, really. I initially thought no way they were going to allow him back into the race. But as soon as we heard them conversing with Michael Massey on the pit wall, we said, oh, well, they might actually be considering this. But they didn't follow loads of other procedures. So hopefully Matt, in his genius, can unravel it.
Okay. So Matt, in your unraveling, I thought initially no chance because he didn't get back to the pit lane under his own power. And it feels like the Red Bull argument was, well, so what? All the other cars went up on trolleys, had loads of work done on it. What does it matter if we towed Perez's car back? And I was surprised when Massa was like, hang on a minute, I'll check back and then let him in. I honestly thought and would have agreed with, no, you crashed. You couldn't get back to the pits. You're out. I thought that was the rule.
Well, everyone thinks that's a rule because that's the rule in Le Mans. In any sports car race. However, as it happens, while many people did things like laundry or heavy drinking during the extended delay, I spent a lot of my time digging through the sporting code. Mm. And what I discovered was that the relevant regulation simply states that the car has to make it to the end of the pit lane under their own power, and they can join after the formation lap goes by at the back. And I will raise the specific example, which we have all seen, of the grid being lined up, someone raising their hand and waving like mad, the start being waved off, and that car being pushed by marshals into the pit lane, restarted, and then taking the start at the end of the pit lane exit. It's actually there's not really a lot of gray about it. There's nothing that prevents the marshals from recovering the car, returning it to the pit lane. The only requirement is that the car itself gets to the end of the pit lane under its own power.
Was that unwrapped enough for you, Kyle?
Yes. yes, but so you're saying that overrules the original. So they still are bound under the original rules. They have to have the tyres off. That's what Mercedes brought up because, well, there's other protocols that they now haven't done because they're in the pit lane. They didn't have their tyres off. They didn't make it to the grid. They didn't follow the grid protocols. That was the flex Mercedes were taking.
No, and that's that. I agreed with that, Matt. And I'm still struggling to see why a car that wasn't on the start grid can suddenly, after two laps, be part of the race.
Because they mentioned the reconnaissance laps, specifically a car not making it back in the reconnaissance laps. I am indeed looking for the exactly relevant regulation while I'm also on the show, which is something I'm not really that good at, if I'm being honest. But my memory of looking at the regs is that they do mention this, like, if it doesn't make it through in the reconnaissance lap, et cetera, and so on.
Do you want me to I'll stall for you and make another quick point while you look those up. Basically,
Christian, these non-broadcasters, they're picking this up.
Sorry, who are you guys? Sorry. What?
Another thing to the Perez thing is if the race would have started, he would have had two more laps of fuel in the car than everyone else because they're not going to take the fuel out. So this is another thing that's making me think it wasn't completely above board because it's like, hang on a minute. He's done two laps less than the whole grid. And then we'll be on the, this is where it was a whole can of worms for me. Like it was irrelevant because the race didn't start, but if the race had started and ran for more than an hour, he would have potentially been in a fuel positive situation compared to everyone else.
Except for he, under red flag conditions, was in the garage where the amount of fuel can be adjusted however you like. In fact, that was a huge advantage for him compared to the other cars on the grid, which at best could simply run their engines to try and burn off fuel they no longer needed. Because, of course, no one remembered that there was a new rule about how many laps would be in the race, depending upon how many delayed starts there were. I did find the following for you under race starting procedure 38.1. Any car which does not complete a reconnaissance lap and reach the grid under its own power will not be permitted to start the race from the grid.
Got it.
Which kind of implies that they will be allowed to start the race.
All right. Okay. So I think we're reaching a reasonable end for a race review that essentially didn't have a race. I've enjoyed all those talking points, and I think we made the right decision to go ahead with that. The other option was to delay till Monday and do a proper news show. But I'm happy that we sort of shared and recapped the experience we all had over four soggy, miserable hours of Spa-Francorchamps.
I agree. I just want to bring up, and this is my own personal opinion.
You're not going back to qualifying again, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm
just
not.
Just checking.
I just remember watching, I think it was Verstappen leaving the pits and just slithering around the pit exit when they went out for the last time. And I'm thinking about Imola, where we saw people just driving around on a wet track behind the safety car and spinning, going off. I know people are going to be upset that overtaking wasn't allowed.
Yeah.
But I don't want to overlook the amount of skill that was required to keep cars like that on track at those speeds on cold tires.
Of course. And with the brakes starting to cool down as well.
Yep.
Yeah. I was really surprised to see Max being so aggressive behind the safety car and going down into, I think it's Malmedy after Lecoums, the right-hander down the hill. He almost collected the safety car. He was testing out the karting, the wet line around the outside, being really aggressive, trying to get some front tire temps. I think the safety car actually had a bit of a moment on the inside and was drifting wide. Max had to get out of it because he would have collected the safety car. So I was actually, I was worried for George. He's got form here before. And I was like, oh no, please don't drop it. But there was a real risk, as Matt says, of somebody silly stuffing it into the barriers and throwing away a great result.
Psychologically, I think the Perez off on the outlap will have given the drivers a bit of a real warning. You know, not generally a reckless driver. True, first admit, I don't think Perez is the greatest in wet conditions. Certainly not in the Red Bull, certainly not this season. But a lot of them will have been tiptoeing around, especially cautiously, because of that. And I like Carl, I was surprised that we didn't get any incidents after the safety car. I was entirely confident that had we gone green after the final go out, if they had not come in, if they'd have gone green, if it had not started raining again, even if it stopped raining, we were red flagging immediately. There was going to be an incident, and overall, I'm pretty pleased that they came in. But the direction I want to go to, Matt, now, I think, to finish our race review off, is that the race was classified as a race. They made a decision to go out and do safety car laps. So we have to get into the minds of race control here. Why did they go out with an hour to go? As the rain was starting to get heavier, it was instantly apparent that the conditions were worse. Like, nearly instantly, they were worse. Max Verstappen was saying they were worse, but we can discount that because he had nothing to lose. He wanted the race to end. He had his half points. Perez was at the back going, this is fine. We should definitely race from here. We can discount that as well as completely motivated reasoning from both Red Bull drivers. But here we go, Christian. Did they go out to fulfill contracts to get those two laps so they could do the half points? Or did they go out with the best of intentions to try and start the race and then go, oh no, it didn't work. Therefore, the half points thing happens. I'm happy with the second one. If they went out with the intention to race and they couldn't get the laps in and they made the decision to come in, then I'm happy with the half points. If they went out with the intention to tick boxes so that they could give the half points and fulfill contracts, I'm unhappy. And those points to me are poor. What do you think, Christian?
Obviously, don't have the answer to that.
No, you can't read their mind. I know that, yes.
No, but it's a lose-lose situation because I think today showed that everyone just wanted to make it happen. Everyone just put on their yes hat and just tried to make it happen, even for the Paris situation and everything, all the communication with the FIA. I think they did their absolute best to try all scenarios, even though when they went out, I'm pretty sure everyone knew this is not going to happen because nothing's changed. And even if it's changed a little bit, nothing will have changed in half an hour again. So I think just everyone tried their best today to give a race to the audience and the TV viewers, but it just wasn't to be.
I actually think the current world situation with COVID and with a calendar that's compressed, trying to get so many races in, I think if we didn't have a calendar that was trying to squeeze what now 22 races in, that they would have taken the decision to just call it early and postpone the race and do it later in the year or try to find another slot for it. But because they've already had all of this reshuffling and jiggery-pokery trying to make it work and they still can't absolutely confirm the schedule yet, I think that played a part in them feeling that they had to get something done today. There isn't time to come back later in the race. They had to do it today.
There were multiple broadcasters talking about a clearing happening between, well, I don't know, maybe 15 after and 30 after the hour when they started. And I remember having a conversation with Brad on WhatsApp about they should just be out there behind the safety car in any event in case the miraculous happens and suddenly you get a spurt of time where you could indeed race the cars. If they're on track, they're ready to go. I think they saw that as their last opportunity to make anything happen. And, oh, by the way, if we do this also, then our TV broadcasters, you know, our promoter for the race, everybody is happy that this happens. And we've got a chance of maybe getting some actual racing in. I don't know. What else are you going to do at that point?
So I'm happy for the rule of charity to say it was a genuine attempt to have some racing action. It didn't work out. And they just happened. Oh, look, it happened to work out. Happy coincidence. They've done those two laps. They fulfilled it. It's an event. They fulfilled the contract to tick all the boxes. I'm going to make you guys now, the FIA, in a situation where you know, you absolutely know that no racing will happen. Is it right to go out behind the safety car, do two laps and award half points, Kyle? What would you have done? You know there's no racing. It's impossible. It's not going to happen.
I believe that was the situation that they were in. I genuinely they knew that racing was not going to happen with the amount of pressures on them and the aforementioned calendar pressures with the contracts as well and everyone there and the TV thing. This is my personal view. Fully 100% think that they knew there wasn't going to be any racing whatsoever and it was a box tick exercise essentially.
Okay. Well, in that case, Matt, I am less comfortable with that and I'm less comfortable with, from a sporting point of view, points being awarded for this quote unquote race.
And I shall have to take issue with my friend Kyle here because if the forecast was there's no chance and there was indeed no chance, I do believe it would be the first rain forecast this entire last two seasons that was even remotely correct. I think that's when it comes to weather, people tend to mistake specificity for accuracy and being accurate in such a small geographic region is incredibly difficult. So if you think there's half a chance, you take it. And I think that's exactly what they did.
Granted. But then why did they leave it so long before they stopped the clock?
Yeah.
Because they gave themselves a narrow window then, essentially, to try to get some racing in. Well, I genuinely believe after about 20 minutes or something into there, they were like, it's not happening today. Let's try and make it look like it's happening, but let's get those boxes ticked.
Because if I am correct in my understanding, the idea they could do that didn't turn up until very close to the time that they actually did it. I.e. one of the teams said, you should go look at this regulation.
Yeah.
And they did.
There's also the small human element to it. So, but for all the fans, it's worth just going around two times. At least you've tried, shown them you've tried. I think that means a lot as well.
Yeah. And there were some people saying, well, you know, they were going around. Why not just keep going around? Just to do the race under the safety car just so we can go, oh, F1 car's pretty.
That would make me cry.
Matt.
Greg Snowman in the chat makes the interesting point. They did compete. It was just on Saturday. They deserve for the competing they did. FIA made the right decision.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And look, it's just one of those things, isn't it? It's an event that I can't remember it really ever happening. I can't remember the race result outside of Monaco being so technically decided by Saturday. So we're just not used to it. and it's happened this one occasion, it's very likely that in all our F1 watching, in all our lives, we'll never see that happen again. But there is an argument, which I think is reasonable, that over the course of the race weekend, the points are awarded for who did better. And since no one was able to show what they did on Saturday, the only measure we have on Sunday, the only measure we have of who did better was Saturday, and they didn't get the full points. However, you know, look at the whole weekend. Who did best? Max Verstappen. So he got the half points on offer. Who did second best? George Russell. He got 9 points. And by the way, Matt, I don't think George Russell is bothered one little bit. I didn't watch the podium ceremony, but he certainly looked very happy when it was announced, and in his mind, that will be a podium.
Yeah, well, and it is. I mean, let's think about poor Carlos Sainz, who twice was awarded third place after the podium had happened.
Yes,
you know, I mean, look, if you're gonna call me up a week later and say, oh, by the way, you finished third in a Formula One race, I'd be like, groovy. It's gone on my resume, you know.
Kyle. I saw the podium, and yeah, it was good. It was fairly muted, but there were some celebrations. I thought George was going to go full Tiago Montero from the 2005 USA Grand Prix, you know, the race of only six cars, where everyone was sort of somber on a podium, and he just went, nah, I've got a podium, I'm celebrating this fully, and just went, just like the meme with the guy in the shell suit and the trophy and the medal and kissing the girl and then sticking his fingers up at everyone. Like, I thought George was going to just go just fully for it. He didn't. Chris Stevens in our group chat made a very good point, because we were arguing, why did they even bother going to the podium? But of course, there's contractual obligations to be met and stuff like that, and sponsors and stuff like that. So that's why. But it was nice to see some sort of celebrations. But yeah, to him, George was funny. Brundle even said it, like, I'm amazed he's keeping a straight face when he was in an interview in the middle of it. He goes, I think we should just do two more laps, maybe just try to do that, and it guarantees I get second.
And we don't blame him one bit. I think in a George Russell interview later on, he sort of made the point, the team kind of deserves some kind of reward for all the effort that they've done and all the good performances they've done on a Saturday. I'll interrupt myself to disagree with myself right there, because I do think that Williams prioritised Saturday in an era where actually Sunday has more weight. I think more than any other era in Formula One since I've been alive, setting up for the race is more important, and qualifying is the least crucial it's ever been. But yes, they've had enough glory on a Saturday for it to be rewarded with points and that podium. And who knows, like Kyle was describing at the beginning of the show, you hustle at the front, you overtake Verstappen, you hold him up, he gets in a battle with Hamilton, they crash out, Vettel then has to fend off Carlos Sainz, and that Williams has enough straight line speed to make himself difficult throughout the course of the weekend. Russell was denied the chance to do that and to fight, as was everyone, of course. But yeah, those three were given points in the order of goodness for everything that they could demonstrate this weekend, which was Saturday. I don't know. I'm not actually trying to, like, I'm not a massive George Russell fan, Kyle. I'm not trying to gift him points that he didn't deserve. I've really been struggling in my head with this, should we have given points for this quote-unquote race or not? And I have landed just slightly on the side of, as it worked out, is perfectly fine by me.
Yeah, I think as it worked out, that's sort of weighed up. It was very, very challenging qualifying. They did a fantastic job in qualifying, and they got rewarded for it, albeit only half points. And one thing we haven't mentioned is Verstappen put in a fantastic qualifying. I think
sure.
He was running very skinny rear wing compared to everyone else. He stuck it on the line, and right at the last, at the death, once again, he delivers a monster lap, a brilliant lap with, you could argue, a car that is not optimized for those conditions. I think he was bit skinny on downforce, as maybe the Merc was as well. The Williams fully optimized for those conditions. Max put it on pole. He beat everyone and has taken the points for it, albeit only half. So was that deserved? Yeah, you could argue yes, that was deserved. His points, George's points, are always going to be deserved in a lot of people's eyes. But yeah, for Williams doing well on Saturday, I think it was deserved. In my own opinion, it's deserved.
I will just say, from here on in, I want that kind of opinion of mine. You can hold me to it. You can definitely hold me to it, which is qualifying is less important in my mind for this modern era. And I'm disappointed I didn't get to see the battle between the Verstappen setup trade-offs and the Hamilton setup trade-offs. I think we were robbed. We were robbed of a fantastic and intriguing strategic battle today. But safety won out, and some people will be unhappy with that. But I'm not. I respect the decision the FIA made, and I just really hope we get some racing in Zandvoort, and I really hope it's not the Monaco without walls scenario that it seems to be, that some people seem to be saying. I hope we do get some decent racing there. Maybe a sprinkle of rain. How about that, mate? Matt, just a sprinkle of rain to make a tight and twisty track just interesting enough.
Yeah, let's go back to the enters to slicks kind of rain.
That crossover.
Because that's where it really gets to be fun.
Tell you what, you can't follow Christian. I can't even say go to Denmark.
If you know where I live, you can.
I can't even go to Denmark and follow the tall, handsome, light-haired fellow, because you all look like that in Denmark.
I'm not sure how to respond to that.
Yes, okay. You can't follow him, but we are trying to persuade him to set up a Mist Apex kind of centric Twitter account.
As I said last time, if you have any idea, I actually had an idea. I'm not sure if this is possible, but I have like a folder somewhere with like thousands of Formula One pics. And we could set up like an Instagram account only with those pictures.
Yeah, we can do Kevin at Mist Apex does photo pics and
something like that.
We'll hook it up. Do follow Kyle though. Go on, Christian, sorry.
One last comment about today. I've realized Sebastian Vettel is going to be the new Charlie Whiting, isn't he?
He could be the future of F1. He has done.
Just think about it. Yeah. Think about it. He will be the perfect race director in 5, 6, 7 years.
He has become everyone's F1 dad. Like, he honestly, I just think he ends every Grand Prix by turning lights off and tutting and closing doors and saying, Were you born in a barn? We're not made of money. I think he does that. And him pulling over and checking that Lando Norris was okay. You would hope that we would all do that. But in reality, very few people do. But he's F1's dad. And he's just pulled over and gone, "Are you all right, son? You all right,
lad?" But also in the segment with the Schumacher, where he drove his dad's old car, Sebastian just came in from the side, just told him how to do everything about the gears and all small details about this Jordan racer from 91. It was just so... Where did he come from? I mean, what's up?
That was absolutely wonderful. I am going to stick it out there now and saying I've always been a Vettel fan. I've always stuck up for him, and he is very anglicised. I've said it on the podcast before. He's probably the F1 driver I'd like to go for a pint with the most. If he does become Charlie Whiting, that's an interesting idea. If he does become the race director, he can call himself a flipper during the race as well, couldn't he?
Yeah. No, I disagree with that though, Kyle. It's got to be... You've got to say Gasly probably puts the best night out on. You've got... Come on. Of all that young crop, they're all nerds.
Ricciardo, no doubt.
Or Gasly. Because look, hang on. I know, look, all the Twitch guys, I mean, they're kind of nerds, aren't they? Norris, Russell, they were nerds at school. We're going out with Gasly and Ricciardo. Tell you what, me and Christian, we'll go out with Ricciardo and Gasly. You go for a night out with Russell and Norris. Enjoy your prawn sandwiches.
Vettel, I ain't going out with the young ones because the music's going to be all this boom boom pop thing that I can't handle. I like Ricciardo's prone to a bit of metal. He likes a bit of metal, and also Vettel. I can imagine sharing a pint of Guinness, discussing the finer points of Monty Python with Vettel, for instance, over a pint. That's my sort of night.
Kyle is on social media. Reluctantly, we made him. He is at Kyle Power F1. Go and give him a follow on Twitter. Matt is at MattPT55 on Twitter and on Facebook as Matt2Rumpits. Again, an account I had to bully people. Maybe I'm the problem bullying people into social media accounts. But if you want to see pictures of Trumpits, which is what he posts, go and follow Matt on Facebook. Matt Trumpits on there. Anything else, Matt?
I could argue with Gary Anderson's take on whether or not they should have raced, if you really want.
I want to hear it.
Do it.
30 seconds, very simple. He says it shouldn't have been down to visibility. It should only be aquaplaning. And I'd argue that at any other track, he'd probably be right. But at Spa, given the disasters we've had with people not even being able to see up the hill in much more dry conditions,
yeah,
not a chance it should be taken. And if you're going to slate the FIA for all the things they did wrong, you got to give them props for getting this one right. They should not have been racing without the safety car.
I agree. And there's a lot of old school racers out there who are very well-informed people who are very intelligent. They've got a vast knowledge of motorsport and they have taken risks in their racing career and they've come out the other end and they've had their war wounds and their scars. And as I used to say, wounds heal and glory lasts forever. But they're on the other side of that career now. And we do live in different times and we do have a different tolerance to what we have as acceptable losses. And I just, we've got to exactly. look after the guys that are out there doing the sport we love for our entertainment. We don't want to willfully make the same mistake twice. Something will always pop up that you didn't anticipate and it will bite you, because that's right, motorsport is dangerous. But when you know about a thing, when you know it's there and then you gun for it to continue, you're advocating some gladiatorial spectator gore fest that I don't think is justified in this world anymore. That's my opinion. Tell me I'm wrong. Email me, matt@missedapex.net, feedback@missedapex.net, spanners@missedapex.net. I do appreciate it's an emotive subject. I have my views on it. I too appreciate the danger and the adrenaline and the bravery of these drivers. I just think that once you identify an issue, it's our responsibility to gun for it, to not repeat and to not go into that particular situation again. I hope that I'm not too much of a wet lettuce for our Missed Apex viewers. But I do also want to encourage people to follow Matt's wife, not in the street like you would with Christian, but on Twitter @AWeaverWrites. She is an author. She sells books. The links to those books and to all the social media we try to promote is in the show notes below. There is also a link, which I put suspiciously near the top, to support us on Patreon. If you enjoy what we do, we are only here because of Patreon support, and you guys have voted with your wallets basically to say, I will do a micro payment every month to keep Missed Apex on the road. So from $1 to $10 to $1 million if you're a fancy billionaire. But you can support us at patreon.com/MissedApex. There's a bunch of tiers. The most popular one is the $5 a month tier, where you get extra content. You can join us in our Patreon Slack group for the live streams and just for general discussions with the panel about golf, health and fitness, iRacing, Formula One, and a range of stuff. It really is a lovely forum. But most of all, you get the warm, fluffy feeling of being responsible for an independent content creator like us, being able to try and kind of compete with some of the bigger boys in our battle zone. Until next time, which will hopefully be a race review, although there may be some interesting midweek content as well. Until next time, in Zandvoort, I'd ask you to work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast. Do you know what, Matt? I've had a slight change of heart. Why don't we, just for a change, we didn't do the other awards, and I think that was correct, but why don't we do Why don't I mix it up? What do you think? Should we do comment of the week? What do you reckon? Up to you. You choose. I don't mind. Either way, I don't mind.
Do I have a suggestion?
Okay, go on. Well, let's do Carl's suggestion first then.
It was from Jacko Lightthelm.
Mm-hmm.
Two mins and we call it a podcast. Right at the very start.
Well, who wins? I win, don't I? Just for being the most recently tanned. Oh, and by the way, I have to show off to the live stream my dragon glitter tattoo.
Ooh,
if a five-year-old tells you to get a dragon glitter tattoo, you get a dragon glitter tattoo, and it will not come off. That was 1 week ago. It is stuck permanently to my body.
Tried battery acid. It's a good remover.
I didn't even try soap. You know me. go on, Matt. What, can you compete with that?
All right. I'm going to start with our friend Stuart Neal. Is this the missed Apex podcast that they talk about on the BBC F1 radio commentary?
They did. Well, Jack Nicholls, they were talking with Jolyon Palmer on their broadcast. I'm a big fan of their broadcast. They were talking about awards they have. And Jack Nicholls mentioned, like, I don't know, Silver Swimming Award or whatever. And then he said, oh, yes, I did also get a missed Apex podcast karting award for the heaviest driver. We had an over 100 kilogram category. He's not a big fat guy. He is just like, he's 8 foot tall.
Enormously tall.
He just has a lot of bones and he's still surprisingly fast. So he gave us a big shout out. So I messaged him and I said, thank you so much for the missed Apex podcast tribute on the street. He insisted it wasn't a tribute, but I am firm that I heard what I wanted to hear. Who else? Who else is a contender for comment of the week?
I think we are going to go with our friend EJ when we were talking about the bandwidth problems of the visor cam, saying most drivers should be 5G compatible via their vaccines.
Oh, God. I'm so sick of that joke. I'm so sick of that. Get vaccinated.
But I mean, come on. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, maybe.
We have Rap Garage, Russell threatening to be most handsome on the grid with that podium smile.
Oh my goodness, he is prepped. He's got a team. He has got a team in between, like he takes his helmet off, he disappears behind a canvas, and then his hair. He's like Johnny Bravo. Hi, I'm amazing and Instagram ready. Look at my face and hair. I'm amazing.
Yep, and I think we'll finish with another Russell comment, this time from our friend Evangelos Heteroclitus. Russell could troll all of F1 by saying something like, we actually sacrificed quali for race pace.
Yeah, he could mess with us. Who's your winner, Matt?
Oh, I don't know. This is a challenging, challenging one. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll go for Jaco Ligdalms, Kyle's comment, whatever it was, because I don't have it written down.
Kyle, you must
I've
remember.
Got it here. Yeah, I shall read it out. 2 mins and we call it a podcast.
Nice.
Right at the very start.
Well, you're the winner. You're the winner. It's comment of the week. Hang on. Oh, 2 seconds. I've got the bumper for this. I've got to press 2 buttons. Comment of the week. I achieved it. Excellent. Okay. Well, I think that an hour and a half for no competitive laps. What? It just shows how much we leave on the table for normal race reviews, because we would love to just go off on tangent. And I'm pretty kind of, no, focus in on the thing and the strategy and the what's it. But, you know, there's always a... here's an anecdote, okay? Before Missed Apex started, in between... So we started, you and me, Matt, on a different website long, long ago.
We did.
The site of which we will not speak its name.
Nope.
And then before that, it's probably going to give away which organisation it was. We started doing various bits and bobs and getting involved. And then out of that, the E radio show with the Formula E show came up.
Yep.
This guy said to me, I said, well, I really want to do a Formula One show again. I was talking if he would be interested in their network having a Formula One show. He said to me, no, I would never do a podcast on a Formula One because there's so many boring races. What would you talk about if there's a boring race? And I said to him straight, I said, are you mad? I said, are you mad? The boring races are the easiest from a broadcast point of view because you've got a blank slate to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Endless speculation. And I remember having the same conversation about off-season content.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
there
yeah.
will be stuff to talk about. I'm like, are you joking?
I know. And people sort of think it's a weird thing. Why do you keep doing shows like over winter? There is one other show I know. Again, I don't want to be attacking other shows. And like, fair play, they do content all through the winter, but they spend the whole time going, oh, bloody hell, we've got nothing to talk about. What's your favorite baguette? And you're like, no, you don't need to talk about your favorite baguette. There's 100 years of history of motorsport or whatever. Not 100 years, but you know what I mean? Like there's decades of things to talk about and to speculate about and rules and driving techniques and the tech side. How are you talking about your baguette? But yeah. Anyway.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.